Welcome to UK Health Radio. You are listening to the Speech and Language Therapy Show, hosted by Shamina Rabi, a consultant speech and language therapist and founder of Unlocking Language, an award-winning independent practice that provides speech and language therapy to both adults and children. She is dedicated to raising awareness about speech, language, communication and swallowing difficulties and empowering those who have them.
On today's show, we've got a fantastic speech and language therapist joining us, Rebecca Bright, MBE, speech and language therapist, techpreneur, entrepreneur, and co-founder of a successful tech company, Therapy Box. Therapy Box specializes in communication and therapy apps for people of all ages and abilities, creating inclusive apps and platforms that make life easier. And in 2014, the company was awarded a Queen's Award for Enterprise for innovation in recognition of the life-changing impact Rebecca's apps have had on people's lives. And in 2016, Rebecca was awarded an MBE. Wow. Welcome, Rebecca. That's so impressive and so amazing.
Oh, thank you, Shamina. That's very kind. And I always feel a little bit embarrassed when people read through some of the awards I won, but I guess it's a nice pat on the back for the journey that we've been through so far.
Absolutely, and definitely for the profession as well, just raising awareness of what speech and language therapy is, how vital it is, how important it is. Just raising the profile of what we do.
I think that that's really important, and I wonder if sometimes as health professionals, we play down what we do, or we don't look necessarily to think that it's something extra special. But I think most speech and language therapists could identify things that have made a substantial difference to, if not one person's life, then to multiple people's lives. So, I think we need to get out there and talk about what we're doing, not least to encourage younger people to join the profession, for that, for them to see a range of role models. I often talk to girls about STEM careers, and I think speech and language therapy is probably one of the very, very few STEM careers which is has more women than men, but people don't necessarily think of, when they're thinking about their careers. So, yes, any chance I have to talk about speech and language therapy and what a career it can offer people, and the different ways you can approach a career and have a portfolio of things you do, and how much people, how much I love a career in this field, and how much I think my colleagues do as well.
Absolutely, you're right. I think speech therapy is the route to develop into so many different things. And I think it's also a profession that you can be really entrepreneurial in. It's great to see so many different speech therapists doing different things within speech and language therapy now. Okay, so this is exciting. So let's start from the beginning. Where did you graduate? How did you get into speech therapy? And what's your journey all the way into Therapy Box? And sure. Where did the name come from? I love the name.
Okay. Well, that's a good story. I started, I'm originally from Australia, and so I studied in Melbourne at La Trobe University, and it's a really practical degree at La Trobe. I was fortunate to have some very inspiring lecturers and clinicians working on the program. And I was very fortunate that in my final year, my project was a website. And this is back in 2001, so it seems like a long time ago. We made with a group of colleagues, I made a pediatric feeding resource website. And our supervisor thought that we should really present it at the national conference the next year in the student stream. And so we did. And I think that really was a bit of a boost in the right direction, having somebody say, you've done a great job. I think you should talk about this. So we spoke about it at the conference, but otherwise I was working in Melbourne in neurological rehab for a number of years before moving over to London in 2005. And again, working in the NHS and then working independently, all within adult neuro rehab.
So that was your interest? That was your initial interest as a speech therapist?
Absolutely. And I think, to be honest, I find that area of speech and language therapy particularly interesting. I like trying to unravel what's going on with somebody after particularly a brain injury, and then think about the functional gains that somebody can make with rehab, both either intensively or even over a number of years. You know, I've worked with clients for short periods of time every day, or I've worked with people once a week for, you know, 2 or 3 years. So I am
so variable.
Always, it's a bit different, you know, and I think you see those little changes which are really rewarding at the beginning, but I think seeing the big lifelong impact and changes that person can make is really rewarding. So I did that for a number of years, and then Therapy Box was actually the name of our business when we started it. And because what I was going to do was sell some resources that I'd made for this group of patients, so sort of, you know, cognitive communication-based content on a website. So I had a website made, and I sold one copy. I translated into four languages for some reason, and sold one copy and made about 50p.
So what was it, a book or sheets?
So it was like worksheets. Okay. So I guess now you can sell them on something like Teachers Pay Teachers or something.
Oh, right,
like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, a bit of a disaster, but it meant getting the website up and running and thinking about starting a business meant we had that infrastructure there.
I mean, that's the story of all successful entrepreneurs though, right? It's kind of trying and trying and trying, and then you find the niche or the successful product.
Exactly. It's never great. You know, if something works the first time, I think you're lucky more than anything else. So that didn't work, but we... my husband and I started to think about AAC, and that was really an area of interest for me because a lot of the people I was working with who had longer term communication disabilities after their brain injuries or who had progressive neurological conditions were lacking access to AAC. So they were either lacking access because there was no one in their support network who knew about it, or they were waiting on funding, or they had devices that were prescribed to them, but they were just sitting on the shelf. So at that time, the iPhone was available and the iPod Touch, but not the iPad. And we thought, okay, this is something that makes sense. Let's think about apps on an iPad. And in 2011, I sketched out a design using PowerPoint for what became Predictable. And Predictable's, the first app that we launched. And
that's a technology. That's a technology to give voices to people who are unable to use their own.
Exactly. So it's used by people, particularly with motor neuron disease, but also people with cerebral palsy, people with autism, people post-stroke, who have good literacy skills, but either a motor speech or an inability to use their voice. And so they use Predictable to communicate with their families, with their support staff on a day-to-day basis. And so that was our first step, and that did better than we had anticipated, and that was incredibly fulfilling for us, I think, as a business.
Fantastic. And were you always quite tech savvy? Because as you know, at the moment we're everyone's having to sort of conform to using tech and video conferencing and lots of apps and resources. And although there was a lot of panic, it's starting to calm down. However, were you always quite tech savvy to have come up with these ideas, or did you have to sort of try and understand how an app works, what platforms to use and things like that?
I certainly think tech aware for a very long time. I've got no idea how to code. I have no idea how to do any of that side of things. But I think speech and language therapists inherently are very good at breaking down problems and helping think of ways for people to compensate or ways to get around problems. So I think that makes for the skills somebody might need to develop apps or to develop other technologies.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you can see that now during this period where speech and language therapists are quickly, you know, converting paper-based resources to, you know, interactive stuff on using PowerPoint or using, you know, other online tools. So I think speech and language therapists are really good at, I would say scrapping together, but that's almost, I think
we're quite creative, aren't we? I think we're creative innovative, and you're right, we're problem solvers. So initially it was like, oh, how are we going to do this? But then once we started to think about how can we personalize this face-to-face sessions to online sessions, you can quickly start thinking creatively about shifting towards that. Okay, fantastic. So your co-founder, is that the person that's also a speech therapist or in tech as well, or how do you guys complement your skills?
Sure. So, I mean, Swapnil's background is very much more commercial and tech than mine, and that works well, I think, in any business or in anything, especially when you're working with your husband. It's very important that you do have separate things that you do, separate roles that you have in the business, so that you can approach a problem with multiple perspectives.
Feeling very well.
I mean, otherwise things wouldn't work. I don't think if we were both speech and language therapists that the business would survive. I don't think that would work.
Brilliant. Okay, so you've got numerous apps that are being developed by Therapy Box. Who thinks of these? Can people approach you with ideas and then you support them? What's the infrastructure of the business?
So it varies. I mean, we have our own range of apps which are driven either by an internal product development sort of cycle that we go through, where we've identified a need or we've seen some technology and thought about how we could utilize that. And then people do come to us with their projects, and we work with a range of partners to either as their technical partner or sometimes as their commercial partner. It just depends on the nature of the project and what's involved. But we work. That means what we've done more recently, which is really exciting for me, is partner with, especially in the UK, some of academics and clinicians through research projects to look at how we develop the tech how we involve patients and their families in designing tech, how we involve clinicians in designing tech that's going to work so that people are going to be able to use it in their current pathways and so that it's going to be commercially successful for us. That's really important. And then we look at how the science behind it. We look at how other people might bring their research to the tech. And a big part of what we do is look at how we evaluate that with clinicians in real life settings to determine the usability of it from a patient perspective and hopefully whether it's going to save time and money and have a strong business case for a commissioner to purchase it down the line. So, we've really switched in terms of how we've worked from designing our own products to working very collaboratively with clinicians and with academics, which is a really rewarding part of the business as well.
And that ties us nicely into talking about this new collaborative endeavour that you have, a new product, Language Explorer.
So back in about 2017 we wanted to look at how we could look at language sampling and make that process easier. We know from all the studies that the reasons that clinicians don't do language sampling or don't do it as much as they'd like to is because of time. So sitting there and transcribing a language sample and then doing analysis is something that we probably, I think, peak at in about final year at university.
And, we'd love to do it. We would love to do it if we had the time and the resources.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? That we, and everybody we spoke to said, I know it's something I should do. It's something I want to do. I know it would give me information that I maybe I'm not getting from other assessments. And so we looked at how we could automate this process. And that was a project funded by the National Institute for Health Research. And that that proof of concept was successful. And so in starting in November last year, we've embarked on a larger two-year project, again funded by NIHR. And we might have co-applicants from clinical and academic backgrounds. So Christina McKean at Newcastle University, Yvonne Wren at the Bristol Speech and Language Therapy Research Unit, and Jerry Bates, who heads up the Speech and Language Therapy Service in Bristol. And so what we're doing is taking what we've learned from that proof of concept project through to developing a tool which will be used by clinicians to analyse language elicited through a story retell task. However, to standardise what we're doing, we're currently doing something a bit crazy, especially in the current situation, which is taking samples from 600 children around the UK who will retell the story that's in the app and then complete some comprehension questions, a sequencing task, and a repetition task. So it's actually quite fun and engaging, and but that's a really novel way of gathering data, and I think involving people in research. So we're grateful that we've had quite a bit of interest since we've started this month. We've got a long way to go because we need 600 samples, which doesn't sound a lot when you're planning a project, but when you get to the data collection stage, you realise what a target.
What a vast number it is. Yeah, absolutely. So you've only launched it this month. Okay.
Yeah, so we've launched the citizen science version of the app this month. And so it doesn't give a report, or it doesn't, it's the tasks that will eventually hopefully go into the test. And children, after they do it, they can listen back to their own story. And there's a fun game. They can fly a pirate ship around. It's a bit of a reward for themselves, but the key thing is that we need 600 kids to go through that process and make sure that that's representative too of the nation. So we need we've got buckets of ages that we need to fill. We've got to ensure as much as possible that we have a representative sample of different socioeconomic groups we'll see how we go. But so far, it's going okay. But we'll need to really work hard to get 600 samples.
Sure, and this is normative data, right? This is so that you've got normative data when you're developing the screening, the assessment tool.
That's right. So we're looking for a representative sample. So that will include typically developing children, but also kids with DLD. They'll be weighted in our data as to their typical representation in the population. So 2 in 30 kids will have DLD. So we'll see that in our sampling that we've done as well.
So is this the so once you gather the data of 600 children, and am I right in saying that parents can also download the app? So anyone can download the app and do it, or is it only speech therapists?
At the moment, anybody can download it and use it. Mm-hmm. And then what will happen is that data comes back to us, and we'll be using it for our machine learning to help identify patterns that might help therapists identify children that are having difficulty and therefore need either further assessment or monitoring, for example. And some research assistants at Newcastle University have got the fun job of transcribing all 600 samples.
Oh, wow.
Because we want to see whether the app is as accurate and as fast as a human, as a speech language therapist. So June, the Newcastle University RAs will be busy transcribing.
Okay, brilliant. So this is the initial, not the initial stage, I guess. Are you halfway through the project now? What are the latter stages that come after this?
So after we complete the citizen science period in September, mm-hmm. we'll be finalizing the tool, the clinical version of the tool, and that will then be evaluated at 3 clinical sites. So with therapists at Bristol, with in the clinics in Newcastle as well, with the NHS Trust in Newcastle, mm-hmm. and also the third site is with the Hackney Learning Trust. So we'll have 3 different sites putting the app through its paces in comparison to doing a CAL 5, and we'll be looking at whether a speech and language therapy assistant carrying out the completing the tests with the child, and then how that compares in terms of a cost and time saving as to a speech and language therapist assessing that same child with a CAL 5.
Oh, how interesting. When will we get to that stage? How long does it... Is this the whole 2-year funded project you were talking about? So the initial idea all the way to getting to that stage of rolling it out to the 3 trusts and getting the results?
Yeah, so and then a little bit further after that, we need to obviously look at the outcomes that we have from the study, and we need to see mark the app as a medical device because it's going to be a clinical decision making support, mm-hmm. And with the new changes in the medical device regulations, we'll be having to go through that process so that it can be designated as CE mark. So after the clinical evaluation, we have to undertake some work for the app to be CE marked as part of the new medical device regulations, because it'll be a clinical device, a clinical decision-making support. And so there's new regulation coming in. It was going to be this year, it's now next year. So we need to ensure that the app meets those standards, which is quite a process to undertake, and one of the reasons we have to collect a lot of data in the project to be able to evidence that.
So the whole aim of the project is ultimately to help speech and language therapists evaluate more children in a shorter space of time. And if this tool, you know, does roll out, did you say that speech and language therapy assistants will also be able to carry it out, as well as speech therapists?
So, yes, so what we hope is that it would be something that a speech and language therapy assistant could go ahead and, you know, for example, go out and visit a school and assess anybody who'd been referred, and that data comes back to either to the speech and language therapist who's supervising them to analyse, and that could really speed things up.
Absolutely. I think that would change pathways and quicken up processes, help put children into initial groups if it's, you know, a mild issue and not something that's so severe that they need more targeted or specialist therapy. So that I think that will really change the pathway for therapy.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that it also provides information that we might not gather normally in terms of some of the narrative skills that a child's using. So that we're able to look at that from the get-go, and look at, you know, things that other assessments you might do on initial consultation perhaps don't delve into as much. So I'm hoping it gives more tools to a therapist to then plan therapy and eventually, you know, look at outcomes.
Can you talk more about the narrative skills? So it's... what is it with the narrative skills that we will be able to look at? What we'll be able to find out?
Sure. So in the app, the children retell a story about a boy looking for treasure. And that will be, you know, the plot more or less is that the little boy's looking for treasure. It's a difficult process. You know, he gets quite frustrated. He mistakes a tortoise for a rock that's on his map, and 2 cheeky parrots steal the map and lead him to the treasure. And then when we hear the children retelling the story, we're looking at whether these children understood that the parrots were an agent of help rather than, you know, naughty parrots. We're looking at whether children picked up on the sequencing of the story, whether they understood the feelings that the boy was expressing when he was disappointed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from the samples I've listened to so far, there's a big difference between the 4 and the 8-year-olds on some of these. We're looking at how, looking at the morphology the child's using, we're looking at the complexity of the sentences that they're able to put together, but also sort of that macro structure of, you know, do they hold that story together? Do they have a beginning, a middle, and an end? Do you hear the children who didn't get it, that the parents were helping? You know, do they realise, who the characters are and so on? So there's a lot of content in that story that we're looking to see what different children make of it and how they use the language that they've been exposed to in the story. So some of this we don't know what they're going to do. You know, I'm really interested.
Yeah.
I've got a few ideas, but I'm really interested to hear the stories as they come in, and I think that's going to be something that's going to be really nice to hear how 600 children tell this story, you know, around the country. Does it, you know, what variation is there, and what's similar about kids?
I'll definitely be downloading it tonight to try out with my 4.5-year-old.
Perfect. Well, we need everybody who's got a 4 to 8-year-old. So everybody I talk to must be getting tired of me asking them if they know anyone 4 to 8.
You've raised some really interesting points about the narrative. There is so much in narrative skills. And now that you've brought it up, I do think that there isn't much out there with speech and language assessments and even interventions. I know a handful. Mm-hmm. And I think we're very creative when we're looking at developing the narrative skills, but there isn't a lot of, formal types of interventions or evidence-based published interventions that we use. So I think this will be really clinical changing for speech and language therapists and for the education system and parents.
I hope so. And I hope we're looking at how we provide our reports too, because we want to make sure that the way we give this information is really usable, because we can spew out lots of data and that look great on a big chart. But what do clinicians want to see? What information is useful for them? So we're doing a lot of work around how information is presented back to clinicians that they then might want to share to families. You may not want to share everything with families, or you might. So we're looking at how the report is very 2020 as well. You know, I think parents are quite savvy, and clinicians have different things they want to drill down and look at. So, we're looking, I think that's also a really key part of the project, is how does this information that we gather from machine learning and we gather from, linguistic analysis, how do we give that information to people so that it's useful? For me, that's a challenge.
And so for parents and speech and language therapists and anyone listening out today, how can they download Language Explorer?
So the app's available on the App Store and the Play Store. So it doesn't matter if you have Android or an iPhone or a tablet, you can download the app. It's free. So you just type in Language Explorer, you will be able to find it. And you need to read the terms and conditions as the parent or the grown-up, and then enter some data about the child so that we understand that we've got a representative sample. So we're looking at what languages the child speaks, and whether or not there's any known disabilities, including speech and language disabilities. And then it takes about 10 minutes, and every friends of mine whose children have done it have said it's lots of fun and they've really enjoyed it. With the pirate theme, I think that seems to help, even for the 8-year-olds. And I wasn't sure whether 8-year-olds were still into pirates, but apparently they don't mind.
I think there's a real pirate theme going on this year. My son actually had was dressed up as a pirate for World Book Day, and he's only 4. Yeah. But you know, he was adamant about being Captain Hook. So there's a real pirate theme going on. Brilliant. Okay, so for listeners there who are listening today, please do download Language Explorer. As Rebecca said, it's available on the App Store and the Play Store.
The Play Store
for Android and Apple phones and iPads. And so going back to Therapy Box now, what are your popular apps?
So I think the very first app that we launched, which is Predictable, is incredibly popular. And we're very fortunate to have an app which is now, 9 years on, being used in 10 languages, in 35 countries, by lots of people around the world. So, you know, I think one of the key things when thinking about designing apps is making sure you're really doing something that's going to either make a difference or be very different to something else that's already out there. And to get out there first, to be honest, so that somebody, you know, people start using and trusting your tech. So Predict is very popular, but also other AAC apps. That we have another app that's also been around for sort of 7 years, which is a visual scene display app, which supports AAC users who rely on context to support their communication.
What's that one called?
It's called Seen and Heard.
Seen and Heard.
So people can take photos of their own environments, it might be their kitchen at home, and then add content to be able to communicate about those, you know, those environments. So start using your personal context. But otherwise we have, you know, we've got some phonics apps that we did with Oxford University Press, which are very popular at the minute. Actually, they're
absolutely.
I suppose everybody's at home wanting to do things with their kids, or some people do. So there's a range of phonics apps that are doing really well at the moment, and they're lovely because they feature Biff, Chip and Kipper, who apparently are used in 80% of schools. So I've got a lovely range of apps that do that.
But I'm sure parents will really like that. So that's the phonics apps that you have.
Yeah, they're phonics apps. And so, you know, there's a phonics spelling dictionary where you can look through the dictionary, and the dictionary is organised as in a phonics approach rather than an alphabetical approach to finding words. So kids can search with speech to find the word that they're looking for to spell, which is nice. And there's a whole range of apps which were originally designed to support the year one phonics check. So, you know, I think that's the sort of age group, sort of 6-7-year-olds, well, sorry, 5-6-7-year-olds really, that are looking to work on those sort of skills. So they're popular. We've got apps for people with dyslexia to support their written work, which are typically used by sort of older students and people at university. Yeah, a whole range of things, but all that generally focus on speech language therapy or technology related to that area.
And are these listed on your website? So if therapists and parents and young people wanted to have a look to see if there were any communication apps appropriate for them, could they just go on your website and have a look?
Yeah, absolutely. So they're all on our therapy-box.co.uk website, or on the App Store. You could even type Therapy Box on the App Store and they would pop up there as well.
So thinking about some of our budding speech therapists who might have an app idea, what do they do with that? So, you know, I've often seen on Twitter, I've got this fabulous idea, or, you know, you're with your speech therapy colleagues and they're like, oh, I'd love to have this in an app form. What can they do with that light bulb moment?
So I think the really key thing is to be honest and work out whether there's a need for that app, because, you know, it's never going to be a massive market, the speech language therapy industry. Having said that, it is in the education part of the App Store, it's the second highest grossing area after second language learning. So I say it's not a big area, but it's not, I mean, you know, comparatively, you're not going to make
That's amazing. Billion.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's a big area. But I think the key thing is to really be honest and look at what else is out there. Don't ask people if they think your app idea is good. Everybody will say yes. Everybody will tell you it's a brilliant idea, but you need to really work out, if I made this app, what would people pay for it? And you need to ask people what they would pay for it. And I think that's the best, you know, don't ask people if it's a good idea. Ask them, if this app was £5, would you download it? Okay. So you need to test your idea before you do anything. And, what you know, don't go and hire a developer somewhere until you know exactly what it needs to do. You need to know exactly what the journey is. You need to have a budget that is bigger than you think, that will, you know, that you can, you know, with contingency in there, because it's always going to be more expensive than you think to develop an app. And then you need to set aside that again or more for marketing it, because if nobody can find it, you know, it doesn't matter how amazing the app is, no one's going, you know, it's going to just disappear. And then if you're fortunate, people will get behind it and start using it. And then the best thing is word of mouth will help with growing it. But if you, yeah, so my key advice is don't jump into it. Make sure that it's a good idea by, you know, really testing whether people are going to pay for it. And if that's, and if they are going to pay for it, is that going to cover your cost?
And how do they go about this test? How do they go about this testing? Would you suggest they speak to a company like yours or an app developer to get some idea off that journey? You know, who to go to?
Yeah, I think so. But, it's, you know, I think it's maybe, you know, putting a Facebook poll or a Twitter survey and just saying, you know, if this was an app, would you pay £5? Would you pay £10? And then working out how many you'd need to sell every day for that to
make some sort of profit.
Be viable. And that very quickly can become like, okay, this is, it's a nice idea, but it's just not scalable. So unless it's a labor of love and, you know, or something that you think strategically is useful for another part of your business, I wouldn't go there. You know, we've done plenty of apps that I thought were amazing. But they sort of just disappear if people aren't prepared to part with their pounds for it. Then, you know, okay. As cynical as that sounds, it's really, you really have to be quite black and white about it, unfortunately.
Those are some really useful pointers. And if we do have a, you know, if we do get to that point where actually people are really interested and it looks like it could be viable, what would those next steps be for the speech therapist or anyone really who's interested in developing an app?
I think the key thing would be to, you know, get some paper and sketch out how the app's going to work, what it's going to look like from your perspective. And the good thing about speech therapists is that you'd be designing for another speech therapist, so you're kind of designing it for yourself. So you're thinking about what, how you would use it. And then using something like a mock-up tool to have that experience of walking through it, even if it was PowerPoint, that you could do it that way, to sort of see how the app would work, and then writing a very, very detailed specification that you would give to a developer, because if you don't tell the developer what you need explicitly, they, you know, it's going to be very hard to realize your vision. So lots of detail and lots of planning and lots of meetings with your developer to make sure that he or she has completely understood it before they start work on it, and to see whatever they're doing often. You don't want to wait 3 months and then see what the developer's been doing behind the scenes, because if he or she has diverged from your plan, it's very hard to backtrack. So you want to keep a close eye on it. That would be my advice. But, you know, it's not difficult. It's just time consuming, I think.
Yeah, and I guess it's not you know, it's not a familiar journey for therapists, or particularly in the clinical field. So I think you know, it's the fear of the unknown. Oh, getting an app developer, looking at marketing, costings, putting a poll out. There seems to be so much, and of course I'm sure it's all valuable, and you need it to make sure that end goal is actually successful.
I think so, but I think a lot of speech and language therapists have those skills. Like I said, problem solving, the ability to break stuff down into detail, to communicate their ideas, to conceptualize. You know, I think that's something that speech and language therapists on the whole probably do quite naturally. So I think, you know, I think speech and language therapists make fantastic app developers.
I love that. That's very empowering. Thank you. So, you know, I know we're very short for time now, but sort of just thinking about where we are in towards, well, halfway or something through the pandemic, maybe lockdown will be easing on Monday, who knows. Any tips, any wise words for the speech therapists out there who, you know, are still having to use teletherapy, still having to think about providing therapy through technology? Anything that would be useful for the speech language therapists out there, and also for the parents who are listening today?
Sure. I mean, I don't think anybody has a playbook, do they, for how to manage, but one of the things, you know, I've noticed how tiring it is to have you know, meetings on Zoom or meetings on Skype, and how that, you know, I think it takes a lot of extra cognitive load to
and
have
vocal load.
And vocal, exactly. So I think we need to be mindful of that. And I don't know, but so for example, some of my son has a music lesson, and he usually has half an hour, but after 15 minutes, that's enough. You know, he's really spent. So I think that, and same for clinicians, you know, so I think it's about spacing things out and keeping sessions short, I think, rather than trying to replicate what you might do face to face where, you know, the whole setup is quite different. But I suppose it's important things like, you know, having a good microphone and having good, you know, headphones to support some of the physical requirements, and try things out. And, you know, and I think parents are probably really understanding, aren't they, of things going wrong or, you know, the tech not working perfectly. People are fairly able to see past those things. It's not, they're not deal breakers. So I think having a go, and maybe it's a chance to experiment and try new things and find ways of working that you might have discounted before. I think it affords everybody an ability to let their clients communicate in a different way. So you're really looking at a different way of having to communicate and use new skills themselves. So maybe it's focusing on the those aspects of planning therapy or planning intervention. But I think, you know, as I said, there's no playbook. So I think we're all sort of in this together, and maybe that
yeah, absolutely.
Maybe it's nice because, you know, it's a bit like my son's teachers. I feel like I know them pretty well now because, you know, you see them and you're hearing much more. So I suppose it's a way to involve families there.
Definitely. Something that my team and I have found is that we've got such great and empowering relationships now with mum and dad, because they're both at home. So the children that we would normally see in school, we can now work directly with the parents and use that home routine and what's at home to really generalize those skills. So, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of silver lining with the work that we do during this pandemic. Well, it's been great to have you on, Rebecca. I could have you on so many shows just to talk about, you know, the tech work that you do. I mean, it's so impressive, and it's so great to have someone like you in our profession that's doing amazing work out there. So, you know, I just want to say congratulations on your achievements so far, and you know, your really successful business and managing you know, with children and just being a real speechpreneur. So yeah.
Oh. Thank you, Shamina. It's very kind. And thank you for having me on. And I'm so pleased we got to have a chat. And, happy to chat again soon.
Brilliant. Thank you, Rebecca.